Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome to a special edition of Interchange on WFHB. This is in partnership with Community Access Television Services. We're recording in the studio here in the Monroe County Public Library right now. I'm your host, Allison Bektesh, and joining me today are the candidates you'll see on the ballot this fall for the Indiana House of Representatives. I'll introduce them around the table here. Welcome to Bob Heaton, who is District 46 incumbent. He's been in office since 2010. We have Peggy Welch, who is the District 60 incumbent, in office since 1998. Matt Ubelar right here, District 62 incumbent since 2010. And at the end of the table here, we have Jim Mann, who is also running for District 46. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to begin just by asking you to introduce yourselves. The Indiana House, how that works in Indiana is that you are a part-time House of Representatives. You have a full-time job somewhere else. So if you want to talk about what you do outside of the House of Representatives and why you are also seeking to add this to your workload, that would be great. And Bob, I'll start with you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Allison. My name is Bob Heaton, and I'm currently the state representative in District 46. In District 46, if you think of Highway 46, which goes from Terre Haute down here to Bloomington, it takes in four counties: Southern Vigo County, Southern Clay County, Southern Owen County, and the western part of Monroe County. You've got two townships, Richland Township and Bean Blossom Township. With the redistricting, I picked up Richland Township, and I found out it's a very big township. We've been doing door-to-door since about first week in June, so meeting a lot of good people out there. But what I do in my real life, I guess, I've been in the insurance business for 32 years. I graduated from Indiana State in 1980. I got a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration with emphasis on marketing, and it's been good. Been a good business, and I self-employed. I have my own corporation and so forth. But it's about working with people and that type of thing, and I've enjoyed that. In the last 2 years, I did get elected back in November 2nd of 2010. And I really am very humbled and appreciate the people who voted for me. It is about giving back. It's about our future. It's about our kids and our grandkids, I feel. Now that my wife and I have been married for 32 years, and we've got two kids, we have two grandchildren, and it is about giving back to the people. It's about being a public servant. People say sometimes politician, but I always like the word public servant. And but my emphasis is on job creation. You know, I think we have to develop that culture there in the State House to be pro-business. And I've met in my new district recently. I toured Cook Medical, not too many miles from here, and just fascinating with that business and that company that's been around 49 years here in this area. So, but it's about job creation. It is about keep developing that culture for job growth, entrepreneurship, and to expand and put Hoosiers back to work.
Thank you, Bob. Mm-hmm. Peggy.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you. Thank you to CATS and to WFHB. I'm Peggy Welch, and I have the privilege of serving as the state representative for the citizens of District 60. And District 60 now includes portions of Monroe and Morgan counties. And I'm asking for the honor of continuing that public service and representation. Allison Keys, Alicia Keys, has just come out with a new song called Girl on Fire. And I haven't been referred to as a girl for a very long time, but I am a woman on fire because I am passionate about public service, and I'm passionate about doing the right thing for the right reason and the right way. I'm on fire to ensure that in this next legislative session that the state surplus of tax dollars is used to wisely be invested in long-term investments in education, infrastructure, and public health. I'm passionate about our schools being adequately funded to provide an environment that students and teachers can be successful. I'm passionate about the middle-class families being able to afford college while not diminishing the excellence of our colleges and universities, especially our research universities. I'm on fire for the use of all the tools and resources to help create jobs, including innovative employment concepts and responsible tax incentives. I'm on fire for the Government Reduction Committee, of which I've been a member, to be used to eliminate unnecessary laws that impede business development. And government transparency, that should be a passion for all legislators. And as a practicing cancer nurse, I'm passionate about the creation of a health insurance program that expands our coverage for the approximately 900,000 uninsured Hoosiers. And I want a program that retains and attracts healthcare providers and that also includes personal responsibility, but most importantly, improves healthcare outcomes for our Hoosiers. And the list of things that I'm passionate about could go on and on. But these are just not words. These are issues that I have affected or have attempted to affect throughout my legislative career. And I'm not done. That passion that I've had is even stronger because each year I better understand the needs of the citizens of District 60 and I better understand the process of being able to move forward a legislative agenda and public policy that will help meet those needs. Allison, I'm very excited about the conversation that we're having here. I've mentioned a few of the issues that are important to me, and I hope that we'll be able to talk in more details about it.
I agree. Thank you, Peggy, for that introduction.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn over here to Matt, if you will also give an introduction and tell us what you're doing outside of
Thank you, Allison. I appreciate that. Allison, I guess a little bit about my background. I come from a very large family. I'm number 7 of 11 children, so family matters have always been of vital interest to me, not only just my own family, but the laws that we work on that affect families, and I want to talk about more of that as we go forward here. But, my history, getting out of high school, I went directly into the mining industry. I've been in the mining industry for 35 years. It's been a terrific career, and I started at the very lowest entry-level position, which I was very happy to participate in. Now I've worked through every piece of mining equipment and every job in the mines that there is, and ended up with a management position at age 25, and today I'm operations manager for Peabody Coal Company for 2 mines. I've had as high as 350 employees. Right now, with the mining being in a bit of a contraction, I'm down to about 150 employees. But you know, each and every one of them people are dear friends. They're terrific workers. They're people that I care a great deal about. And currently in my current position, the health and safety of every one of them men is paramount, you know, in my industry. And then next after that, how do you ensure to keep these guys their jobs? But been married for 27 years, have 2 sons, both of whom are in college, and they're doing very well, working and getting the education they need to be productive citizens out there too. So, you know, when I look at the things that I think are going to be the big issues here for District 62, them are the 2 things, good education and solid job growth in our district. So I guess with mining being on the western side of my district, that's of great concern to me, and the attacks from the federal administrations on mining and the effects of mining, but also on the eastern end, you have what I think is a diamond for Indiana, and that's the Crane Surface Warfare Center and the technology that is down there. And today, my district, District 62, Martin County, has the highest amount or the fourth largest amount of STEM jobs in the nation on a county basis. So science, math, engineering, and technology, them jobs are key. How are we going to train our children to get them jobs? You know, how are we going to get our workforce trained to take the mining jobs to fill out all the positions that we need? And again, coming on into Bloomington, the medical device industry is very heavy up here. Also, you have Indiana University. So we have got in District 62, and by the way, I might add that I took some of Peggy's district from her here in Monroe County. I sure did. Peggy and I think have the greatest change of voters in the entire House. So very interested in making sure that I know the needs here in Monroe County. I've met some fabulous people up here that I've been able to engage, get the feel for what they need. And I look forward to representing Monroe County. So with that, you know, again, if you could just boil it down to two or three issues that are paramount, I think, for our district and our state, it's going to come down to jobs and proper funding of education, and then advanced training for the people that are finding themselves out of work today. And, you know, geez, what am I going to do? I'm age 50 and my job's dried up. Where are we going from here? So them are the things that I really worry about. And then, of course, the very solemn promise that we've made to our elderly and our disabled members in our state. How are we going to further fund that and make sure they have the things they need going forward? Electric rates keep going up, food keeps going up. All them things are vital, and they're on fixed income, so how are we going to handle them issues when we go to the State House? And making sure that budget is intact, balanced, and ready to serve the people that are in the most need is very critical.
Thank you, Matt. That's a lot of issues that I do hope that that's what we take up the primary of this hour discussing. But I want to move on. And Jim, I want you to introduce yourself as well. First time running for District 46 here. So if you could tell us what you do and why you've chosen to run for office.
Well, thank you very much, Allison. My name is Jim Mann. I have a website, jimmann.org. I have never run for office for anything. I teach government at Terre Haute South Vigo High School, so I am a public school teacher. My son started kindergarten at a public school, Dixie B. Elementary in Vigo County. My wife, Eileen, teaches Latin at Terre Haute North Vigo High School. We have thoroughly enjoyed the campaign to date. Just the quality of people that we have come in contact to, whether it was at the Quarry Festival in Steinsville or the Fall Festival at Ellisville, just tremendous opportunity to get out and meet people. In fact, I was the only candidate for District 46 that walked in both the Apple Butter and Ellettsville Fall Festival parades. And I think it's very important to note that if you're going to be a representative, you need to represent the people. And I really have the privilege of being the Democratic Party candidate for House District 46. There are a number of issues that people have spoken to me about, particularly when I was walking in Richland Township. We heard quite a bit of concerns regarding senior citizens that's been brought up here. A lot of questions regarding the public schools. District 46 is going to have a new representative in terms of Richland Township. Peggy did have it prior to this General Assembly change. And the third question that was really brought up regarding people who work for organized labor, people who had concerns about working Hoosiers. And so those are three issues that when we went door to door, particularly in Richland Township, those questions came out. And people were genuinely concerned. We know 2 years ago politicians ran on categories X, Y, and Z, but then when the session started, there became laws for public schools, and there became laws for right to work. And that was not what was on the agenda when you watched the commercials of politicians in 2010. So I would be a little leery about what is being said today, because once you get in the office, then you would have some concern as to what is actually going to be discussed. So my three main issues, as speaking with people in Monroe County, Owen County, would be senior citizens, public schools, and Working Hoosiers. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I know WFHB and CATS does provide an excellent opportunity for an informed citizenry. As a government teacher, I talk all the time to the students about being informed, making very good decisions, and avenues such as this one does provide for that.
Thank you, Jim. Well, since you've brought it up, let's get to talking about these new districts and what you're hearing from your constituents. Peggy, since it seems that your district was shifted the most, maybe I'll begin with you. Again, we will just have a discussion between us. This is so exciting for me that I get to speak with people running to represent this area and have discussion about politics. We don't get to do it all the time, so I appreciate all four of you coming down and participating. This is going to be very much discussion-based. I will ask some questions and allow each of you to start and respond. I do want you to discuss.
So we can have it as a conversation.
Absolutely. Okay. Feel free. So I'll begin addressing you. What are you hearing from your constituents?
Sure.
What are the most important issues for them? And how has that changed as the district has changed and as the times have changed mm-hmm. since the last election mm-hmm. in 2010?
District 60 has been redrawn now. It's a 72% new district. And Matt, yours is like 72%
same
also.
Thing.
So lots of new people. Still have a few portions of the old district, some new portions of Monroe County, but the majority of the district is now up in Morgan County. And that's where I've been immersing myself because those folks have not had an opportunity to get to know me. And so when I made the decision to run for re-election, since, again, July of 2011, I have totally been spending my time there and getting to know them. And they're wonderful. They have been very kind and welcoming to me. And what I hear from folks is they're, I hear regularly, Peggy, I've never seen anybody, campaigns like you do. And what it is, I just make myself available. I am at everything. I'm involved. I go to the meetings. I attend the festivals. And that's why my voice is like this. I did a 3-night and 1-day festival over in Martinsville. And lots of talking, so forgive my voice.
What they're
talking about is obviously concerned about jobs. I mean, we all can say jobs, jobs, jobs. But when you start boiling it down, is the education that we've got to have for that. They're concerned about what Indiana is going to do with the Affordable Care Act, as some people call it the Obamacare. So we can talk in more detail if we want to about that. And they just want a future for their kids. I've sat down with from business leaders to just the regular guys on the street, and they just want to know that there's something for their kids to be able to go into, whether it's directly out of a training program or college, but can they stay in the area too? And so those are the things that I'm hearing. But I'll, to answer those questions, it's multi-level.
Absolutely.
And so I hope that we'd be able to get into more of that.
Absolutely. I do want to turn to solutions. Have you noticed a change in what people are interested in the redistricting or since 2010?
No. Hoosiers are Hoosiers, and they have the same values and the same desires, whether it's Monroe County or whether it's Morgan County. People think, that Monroe County, it's just so liberal. The district that I've been serving has been a 60% Republican district, and it continues to be a 60% Republican district. There's values that are important to them on some social issues, but they really care about jobs and education.
Thank you. Matt, so that we have the same redistricting mm-hmm. issue. And
absolutely.
What have you done to go meet the new people in district, and do they have different concerns than what you've heard in campaigning 2 years ago?
Well, basically, it's very much the same as what Peggy said. I mean, there's no question. Jobs are at the very top of every issue you go to. And as Peggy said, I mean, I don't care if it's grandma and grandpa or mom and dad, you know, if they're out of work, are they seeing their own children come into the workforce? What in the world are we going to do? What is in it for our children? What's going to happen? So I think, you know, the job training issues and all the way down to our K-12 education. I mean, we need to take a look at what we're doing with education and as it relates to jobs. These STEM jobs that I talked about, science, technology, engineering, and math, them jobs, there's two of them jobs for every one unemployed person.
The skills gap is a huge
issue. So the skills issue is there, and we need to look at that. I mean, with all that population of STEM jobs, in especially in my district, I want them jobs for my people. I, you know, care about the folks in Ohio and Kentucky, but you know what? I don't care about them like I do for us people in District 62 in Indiana. So we need to be grasping them jobs for ourselves. We don't need to be importing people for that. So we need to take a look. What do we need to do to get them jobs in place? Then making sure that we have the proper tax structures, the proper incentives for every small business to expand, giving them the confidence that they need that, you know what, I can invest in my business, I can grow my business.
So are you now, hearing from your constituents that they don't feel comfortable right now growing as a
business?
Oh, no,
absolutely not comfortable. Now, a lot of it stems from national issues, and that's probably bigger in that area than anything. What's going to be the next shoe to drop there? But the Affordable Care Act, I mean, I said on Ways and Means as well as Peggy does, and we know that, you know, if Mr. Romney gets in office, will he repeal it? If not, how are we going to enact that? It's going to take money, and we talk about a budget surplus today, but at the end of the day, you know, is it going to take $100 million, $200 million? What's it going to take to enact the Affordable Care Act? So is that budget surplus going to dry up for us? So, you know, before a legislator can get out and say, oh, yeah, we're going to put more funding here, we're going to put more funding there, you know what? We have mandates from the federal government that any of us in this room after we're elected cannot do much about it. We're going to have to do what the federal government mandates us to do. Now, you know, I've always been one that wanted to say, hey, guys, what about the 10th Amendment? You know, we're going to stand up to some of this. So it takes a unified legislature, takes a lot of that. But I'm telling you that jobs are at the absolute top of everyone's point of interest, and it goes from every age group, every single age group. What is going to happen to my retirement? What is it going to be enough when I retire? Geez, my job, will it last to my retirement? I'm age 50. I need 10 or 12 more years. You know, and geez, I'm just now starting. Will this industry be here when I get started? You know, will it last me a lifetime? So them issues are there, and that is the person on the street, but you get the same reaction from the business owners.
All right.
My goodness, can I continue
to grow?
And I
hope that we will talk about that budget surplus, because that's going to be critical for whoever is going to be serving in the legislature. So
thank you. And I do, you brought up two things. I want to talk about how the House of Representatives is able to talk both with local governments and federal government and state administration and definitely get to solutions. But I want to make sure that we're talking about the things that the people in this county want to talk about. So Bob, will you share with me what people are asking for?
Well, Allison, because of the new district, like I said earlier, we did a lot of door-to-door in the new district, and just about a week and a half ago, I met with Dan Peterson, one of the top executives at Cook Medical. And Dan, he more or less told me the story about Mr. Cook, how he started and so forth. And Gail went to IU, so that was a big reason why they settled in Bloomington. But the thing of it is, that's a corporation that, like I said, been around since 1963. But it started in the 50s in just an apartment out here, as maybe some of the people out there know about that story. But they have offices in Ireland, Australia, Denmark, and throughout the United States, outside Pittsburgh and California, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And here, the world headquarters, again, just about 6-7 minutes away from these studios, but they employ over 3,000 people here. And the CEO, Steve Ferguson, who I met recently, he went on national news, Fox and Friends, on August the 1st. He talked to Gretchen Carlson. And he told her and the national audience that they're not going to expand by 1,500 jobs like they were planning on doing that because of Obamacare, because of that 2.3% tax that was going to be imposed on them through the medical devices. And so, as I told a group of people the other day, you know, when you talk about business and you talk about profits, it's very important for companies like Cook Medical to have a profit so they can expand, so they can grow. So those 1,500 jobs that they were going to expand, those 1,500 people are not going to have great benefits from Cook Medical, you know, as Mr. Ferguson said, they're going to put those on the shelves right now. But it's something that is true to my heart because, And I recently got the endorsement from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and I'm a member there, but it's 15,000 members. But that deals with small businesses. And a lot of these businesses that we have out here, that may be big businesses like Cook Medical, started out in as a very, very small one or two man shop, so to speak. I know over in Spencer, in Owen County, you know, Boston Scientific, you know, Sally Vance and her husband and another individual started that business or a business in their garage. Again, medical devices back in the 80s. And then they grew and they expanded, and all of a sudden, you know, we have Boston Scientific over there, over 1,000 employees in the Spencer area. And so it just keeps growing, and so it's something that we got to focus on. But education and businesses go hand in hand, because we need to educate that workforce, like Matt was talking about, you know, science and technology and engineering and math. Because, and I think that's one thing that our caucus is looking at, to how to tie that gap with education and business. And I think Congressman Mike Pence recently said on the campaign trail that's what he wants to promote, and that's what we need to do to keep these jobs here in Indiana and not have them go other parts of the country or overseas.
Thank you. Jim, Bob says he's been knocking door to door and talking to people. Have you been doing the same, and what have they been saying to you? What are their priorities?
Sure, and I think my answer is going to be a little different from this. We have a lot of what-ifs coming along here, but I know in Indiana we have the Department of Workforce Development, so DWD is already in place. There's a location here on Landmark Avenue in Bloomington. There's a location on Morgan Street in Spencer, and these are tremendous resources that have already been established by our state leaders. And I would encourage people, if you're looking for job opportunities, job training, if you need to get your GED, I taught for 11 years adult basic education at the public library in West Terre Haute. And I can't tell you the number of people that came up and they just were not happy with their current life situation. And they wanted to make a change. And they knew that they got eliminated a lot of times just by filling out the job application that said high school graduate, and they had to put no. And so the Department of Workforce Development, working with individuals to help them get that GED, makes them more marketable for job opportunities. I heard a lot about vocational ed when I went door to door, and very concerned about what's going on in our schools. Do we have a buildings trade program? We're always going to be building homes in our community, so do we have building trades going on within our public schools? Do we have auto repair? Cars break down all the time. Do we have small engine repair? Being a candidate, first time, our washer went out at home yesterday. So tomorrow from 4 to 6, I'm not available because I'm waiting for the appliance guy to come. But those are jobs that are going to be around for a long, long time. And I'd like to see our public schools have a focus with that. I also believe there should be a farming component to the schools. There should be a farm attached, and people can go out and learn to do work in that regard. And so those are some conversations that I had with residents. Let me tell you about I-69. About every fourth house, somebody had a comment, are we going to finish I-69? And I would say that's going to be a job starter for a lot of people. Mr. Ubelor mentioning Crane here, people just getting access to I-69 and being able to go to and fro. So that came up quite a bit. And then the final one are the general conditions of our infrastructure. Bridges, roads, streets, those types of conditions, which are always addressed. I'm sure the flooding from a few years ago did impact a lot of country roads in particular, and they need to be built back, same way with some bridges that got washed out. And so those are four areas. But I would like for this election to really focus on what we can do to help people at the moment. And then the government does have some opportunities that are available to folks if they want to take advantage of them. My website, should I be elected, will include an entire section on job opportunities for people where they can learn to get GEDs, where they can learn to get access within their particular counties, whether it's Monroe, Owen, Clay, or Vigo. I believe a representative of those four counties should be a clearinghouse, so to speak, for people to go to and find information. And I welcome that opportunity to continue listening to what people have to say.
All right, wonderful. Well, now we know where to go from here. Jobs and education is what you're hearing. We will get to solutions on those after a break. Let me tell the audience that we are joined today with representatives for the Indiana House of Representatives. We have Bob Heaton, who's running the incumbent for District 46, Peggy Welch, District 60 incumbent, Matt, I'm sorry, I think I pronounced your name incorrectly the first time, Ubelar, the District 62, and Jim Mann is also running for District 46. I'll be able to say it a couple more times and get it right by the end there.
You'll get it right.
And I should mention that Peggy Mayfield, also running for District 60, was not able to join us today. And Jeff Sparks, also running for District 62, canceled at the last minute this morning. He had a meeting that came up, and he was not able to come. So that will fill out the House of Representatives that you'll see on the Monroe County ballot as you go to the polls this fall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Thank you. We're back on Interchange on WFHB. We are recording in the Community Access Television Services, a special joint production for your candidate roundtable here at WFHB and Interchange. I'm joined by representatives here for the Indiana State representatives, candidates for that office. Bob Heaton is here, incumbent for District 46. Peggy Welch, District 60 incumbent, and Matt Ubelar from District 62.
Good job.
Thank you. Gave me that second try. And rounding out this roundtable here is Jim Mann, also running for District 46. So I'm really glad that you've been out in the community and speaking mm-hmm. with your constituents. Mm-hmm. I think that is vital, of course, as news media. Mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to do as well, is just get the word out and get that discussion going.
Thank you.
Speaking about jobs and education, and I like how you've pointed out that those go hand in hand, mm-hmm. that we have some jobs that people are just not educated for, and that when you give people the opportunity for that education, mm-hmm. perhaps more jobs are created. So I am interested, obviously those are broad themes. I'm interested in some solutions to those, and
any legislation that you have on the table that could lead to that, or what your solutions are. Jim, actually, I'm going to start with you. You are an educator, and education's been pointed out a couple times. What can be done differently to make sure that that education is matching what the needs of our constituents?
We need to have fully functional public schools. Just look at it from the angle of a property owner. If your public schools aren't failing, your value of your property is going to decrease. And if you look at it from a future level, the next generation should live better than we are. Two generations should live better than that generation. And so we really need to focus in on making our public schools better. They're not perfect. They do need improvement. But they don't need to have some of the challenges that are currently facing the civic leaders, the parents, the students, and the teachers. I think if you look at what the public schools have been able to do up to this point, the graduation rate here in Richland Bean Blossom Community School Corporation has been over 90% for a number of years now, and it topped out at 95% at one time. Not 100%, so it needs to be improved, but you don't need to have them losing 8 teachers, 16 staff members. You need to be able to focus in on ways to making improvements. Same way with Spencer Owen Community Schools, graduation rate increasing here. And so playing by the standards set by the Department of Ed, the schools are improving each and every year when you see those statistics. I would hope that the Department of Education would take a pause. They have put forth many changes, and I think it would be good to just sort of step back and evaluate what is going on instead of pushing for more. Let's look and see what changes were successful, which ones were not successful. So I would say a call for that. When you look at the job opportunities, college and career readiness is a very important component right now that a lot of schools are focusing on and trying to get kids to earn college credit, advanced placement credit, which then gets them into the university or college setting with some additional credit, with some credits that furthers them along their freshman year. Some even enter as sophomore years students. And so I think those types of programs that have been established are very good.
And actually, Bob, you mentioned, I spoke with candidate for Governor Mike Pence as well. These vocational programs is on that agenda. Can you chime in here and talk
Absolutely.
About some of that?
Well, I think, you know, just like a couple years ago, I was at the coffee shop in Terre Haute, and someone said, Bob, you know, my son's a welder, and he just got on at Edwardsport down at the power plant, starting out at $37 an hour. Okay, and he was able to get that at the high school level. Okay, I know, I think Terre Haute South has a welding class. When I went to Clay City back in the 70s, we had a welding class. We also had FFA and ag and so forth, that type of thing. But I think in some of these maybe rural schools, they may not have the resources to have those kind of programs. And so I think the emphasis there is, you know, not everybody's going to go to Purdue University or IU or wherever it may be. But, you know, some people are just not maybe cut out for that. But they want to be in the building trades. They want to be a welder. They want to be, you know, a farmer, stay at home with that farming operation like their dad and grandfather has. So but it does come in together, you know, with that education. And speaking of that, when I was out there on the campaign trail for several months, people said, well, I'm glad you guys, you know, funded, you know, full-day kindergarten. And I think Peggy, you know, voted for that. And it's something at no matter what age, you know, K through 12, it's very, very important. So we just can't just throw a little money there. We got to fund it and we got to go full boat at it. But also, I've had a few people because of that said, well, what about preschool? You know, so I think there at the State House, we're going to be looking at that because I know in some states they have that. And Indiana, I think, is one of a few states that does not have any funding of preschool. And so statistics show that the earlier you can get these kids plugged in that type of setting, you know, they're going to benefit from it down the road and get plugged in and get that emphasis on, you know, studying, doing the ABCs, counting and so forth, that type of thing. I've got a 3-year-old grandson and he just turned 3 about 3 months ago and he can count to 50. Now, my daughter, she's a pharmacist, and She had a great education at Terre Haute South and went to Purdue and pharmacy school and so forth. But she's there, you know, teaching little Daniel daily. And I know a lot of folks out there may not have that really close contact with their kids because maybe they have to work and so forth. But my daughter Allison, she really works hard at it. And little Elise, who's a year and a half old, she may do the same thing someday. But it's about starting them at a very young age, getting them to understand, to read, Papaw, here, read this book to me, that type of thing. It's a joy to just go over there and to do that. And I might add, and this is very, very unusual, but my daughter and son-in-law, and I know Peggy knows my son-in-law, Andrew, but they've been married about 5.5 years, and they do not own a TV. Now, that's, I don't know if I can handle that, but they don't. But the emphasis there with the kids is learning, communicating, that type of thing. And a lot of times it starts right in the home at a very, very young age, and I think that's what's very important.
Well, I'm interested in this, actually. And your stat that 2-to-1, we have jobs for how many people are educated for that. But here in Monroe County, we actually had to put on a referendum that we passed in order to get more money into our schools. So how do we find that funding to make sure that we can start a new program that teaches these skills? Or why are we having to get that money locally to the schools? Why isn't it being provided from the state?
I'm gonna back up just a little bit, though, because I want to mention, from the very beginning of my career, I've been able to serve on the Ways and Means Committee. And it's a great place to serve because everything we're talking about is eventually going to go through Ways and Means. So when we talk about education, I don't know if any, either one of you serve on the education committees. They pass the policy, yeah, but policy, we don't necessarily deal with that. But you can pass all the policy you want, but you got to fund it.
Okay.
And you got to make sure it is going to be able to move forward. And that's what's going to be so important during this 2013 session, because we're going to be creating the new 2-year budget. And we've got to look at how are we going to make sure, I think we all agree, money should follow the child. That's not a problem. But we've got to look at the extra risk factors that some different schools have, the growing schools versus the schools that are stagnant or the schools that actually are losing kids. What kind of things are needed at the school, be it capital projects, which still comes from the property taxes, whereas the operational money comes from our sales taxes and income taxes. So it's very important when you think about who's going to be representing you is who's going to take that message and have the focus on spending the money wisely and using the money wisely. So obviously, funding education appropriately. But we've got to look at how we're going to be funding the other things that are important for economic development. We've heard mentioned infrastructure. And we all talk about I-69. But you talk to our locals for our county roads and streets and our city roads and streets. We need money for that. And that's just as important as the state money that is needed for economic development, for that infrastructure. And infrastructure is just not roads. It's those ugly things that we don't think about, the sewers and the water system. And Indiana has not chosen to invest our money in that. So as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, I'm going to be asking really tough questions in this upcoming budget. What are we doing to make long-term investments? You'll find with us as legislators, we tend to want to make decisions that are every 2-to-4-year decisions because we want immediate credit, you know, and I want to see immediate results so somebody can thank me for it. That's kind of the attitude that people can think about us. Making that long-term decision, and Steve Ferguson is one of my mentors, mm-hmm. and he's always saying to me, Peggy, don't think about here, think about out there. How is what you're doing going to affect the future? And so we've got to make some pretty tough decisions. Pre-K is one. And I've been, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, for years. This is not just something that has come along lately. The members of my caucus and I have been saying for years, we've got to make that investment. I wish we would have made it 10 years ago or more when we started talking about what kind of benefits would we already be having from it. And then we've got to, so in education, in the infrastructure, in tax, we get to, Matt and I serving on the Ways and Means Committee, but we get to affect tax policy. And making sure that we've got responsible tax reform, tax cuts, to be able to continue to create the climate that's needed. So it's, as I've said before, it's multi-layered of how we're going to get to answers. There's not one silver bullet that's going to really get us to the place we need to be. But I'm telling you, that's why I feel very privileged to be on the Ways and Means Committee and then also on the State Budget Committee, that we approve the projects that are going to move forward. And
Well, and we're running out of time, and of course, there's so many more things. We could take each topic and make it the full hour. Mm-hmm. Matt, if you will respond to that, since you're also on the Ways and Means Committee, if you can bring it back to education, is there even the funding to get, I mean, if this is one of our main priorities, mm-hmm. is to get new programs in public schools that can get people into the jobs that they need, is there the money there? Where would that money come from?
Well, the money is going to have to come from, obviously, the structure that's there today, and it's going to come down to us setting priorities. It's plain and simple. Mm-hmm. What are the priorities? But, you know, I guess I have to digress just a bit, but being my first term and sitting on Ways and Means with Peggy and all the other group there, I was amazed to find out how much money our colleges and universities were spending on remediation. And, you know, and when I go back and you start questioning, then, well, has anyone ever come in from whatever high school to see what it takes to get into your engineering program, to get into your nursing program, to get into whatever program you're offering? Well, the answer is always no. So I see a communication failure there. But on the other hand, you know, if you go to the high school setting, you see a shortage of counselors there to help guide them children also. So I think that communication thing back and forth, is it coming from, you know, starting at the university level or starting at the K through 12 level? I don't know, but there's definitely a disconnect there that has to be addressed to get these children prepared for the career they want. It has to happen because we're wasting not only parents' money but state money also in all this remediation stuff that we're doing now. So, you know, when it comes down to the vocational level in school, again, as Jim alluded to, vitally important. You cannot let these children go out into the workforce without an introduction to a skill set. I do not expect every K through 12 school out there to graduate mechanics, welders, whatever it might be, carpenters, but we have to introduce some children to a skill set and let them know where they want to go. I think we're expecting schools to be everything to everybody. I think we need to let community schools say, you know what, I want to be the great math school and I want to be the ag school, and let these parents choose where they want to go. Now, where is the money coming from? I'm telling you, it's priorities based in our state government. We have to set priorities where we're going to put these dollars at, and it's going to take a lot of finagling between all the varying entities there to agree on that. So I think the money is going to be there. I think the commitment is there from whoever's elected governor, be it Congressman Pence or former Speaker Gregg. I think the commitment is there to address these issues and set priorities, and we have to get it right.
But
we,
Allison,
we can't
let it down. One of the problems is going to be we've got a $2 billion surplus, and there's going to be everybody pulling on our coattails wanting to spend that money. So that would be one of the places to do it, but again, it's going to be the priorities. How are we going to use that, and how are we going to use it wisely, and what kind of investments are we making? That's right. So that's going to be very important, whoever's sitting on the Ways and Means Committee.
And is the priority for you education?
Education, but putting it all together
well.
with all the other factors.
Yeah,
there's so
jobs,
much.
Education, they're tied together.
That's
so
right.
I want
so
to put them together.
Yes, of course.
I really appreciate what's being discussed here because this does sound so positive for our public schools. But there is an unknown factor here with the number of vouchers that are out there, with the creation of more charter schools, because that takes the money right off of the top that's available. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be very difficult to project how much money is going to be available because each year, after this year, the cap is gone on those vouchers. And so there is the potential for school districts like the one in Richland Bean Blossom, the one in Spencer Owen, to see less funding coming their way because the per pupil amount is decreased. And that will make for even more difficult choices that the leaders of these schools, the parents of these schools, are going to be going into. So I would like to see us reevaluate the choices right now being made for vouchers for charter schools, because that is money that's going to be taken away potentially, which could hurt more of the programs that are being discussed right here. And I, as a public school teacher, more counselors, more, this is fascinating and it's very helpful for what's best for our kids. And for years, I always taught the kids, I said, I don't want you to come back next year and tell me I did a good job. I want you to come back 15 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, and say, I'm still using. And I've taught 25 years now, so I'm having some of those kids come back. And it's very rewarding to hear that. Not what did I do 3 months from now for them, which is what the RISE testing is testing. We're taking an Apperson sheet now, a Scantron sheet, and the multiple choice test is evaluating the effectiveness of our classroom teachers. Well, it's 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road that you find the effectiveness of that, not what they can do on an ABCD exam.
Well, I absolutely hate to cut the education discussion short because that I agree that's fascinating, and I thank you all for participating in that. But we are running across the hour here, and I do want to give you a chance for closing statements at the end. So let's talk about the other side of that equation very quickly, the jobs. On the other side of the education, we have the jobs. And infrastructure has been brought up by all of you, and I think that that is an interesting combination. If we can get infrastructure projects going, maybe there's jobs right there. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, as a House representative, how you're able to work with a local government and state administration to make that work. So maybe we'll go around the table here. I'd like to use I-69 as an example. That is a pet project of current Governor Daniels and something that's, you know, multi-state wide. It has a lot of reach beyond the voters here. However, the voters here are not interested in that project. You know, the elected officials, the city council, the mayor of Monroe County aren't interested in I-69. So how do you listen to the state and what's coming down from there and each individual city that you represent? And go ahead, Bob, with that.
Well, the other night we were over at the VFW in Spencer, and we had a candidate forum. We talked about, you know, the roads over there in Owen County, and I've been on a lot of those roads, and there's a lot of hills and hollers and washouts and that type of thing. But it seems like that, you know, they're talking about we don't have enough money. And we're talking about maybe $50,000 or $100,000 that Owen County would love to get back. And at the rural caucus that we had recently up at the state fair, I've attended that every year, and Representative Tom Saunders from Louisville, he spoke up. And I agree with Tom, and what Tom says to the membership, you know, both Senate, House, as well as Democrat and Republicans that were there. It was really sponsored by the Indiana Farm Bureau, a lot of Farm Bureau members as well. But that's something that if we can take the excise tax from our, you know, pickup trucks and bring them back to the community, maybe we can use some of that money to fund the road projects that we need so much, instead of it going up to Indianapolis and it stays there, you know. And so I'm hearing that from my constituents because I have a lot of rural constituents out there who, you know, it's never enough money. And again, we got to understand that, you know, where does the money come from? Well, it comes from the taxpayers. You know, they do pay the taxes, and these people, when they pay that excise tax on that pickup, well, they're paying for it, and they want some of that money to come back to them.
Peggy, couple of different things you ask about working with the locals. That's one of the reasons in Morgan County I've attempted to attend some of the meetings of the local groups like the commissioners, the Mooresville Town Board, the county council, because really what it's based on is relationships that they can call up and say, hey, Peggy, this bill's about to come up, because they're going to know about it before we do because their leadership, their organization has told them about it. Oh, that's going to be an unfunded mandate? Oh, we've got to check on that. We've got to work on that. So it's about relationships and communication. With the infrastructure, specifically with roads, we've got to find ways to be able to pay for it. And there's conversations that are going on in other states. I was just reading an article about Texas, but we're already starting the conversation in Indiana. What are we going to do with the sales tax on gas? Should that be diverted? That goes into the general fund. It does not go into actual being used for roads. And the gas tax is not just used for roads. Only a small percentage of the majority of it is going to pay for the budget and the funding of our state police and other organizations. So we've got to come and bring that back as to how we're going to use that money for infrastructure. I-69, there's no more money for it. It is going to stop at the southern end of Bloomington. And to just do Section 5 is a $300 million. All the money has gone out of major moves, and we've got to come up with what we're going to do on that.
You know, so we're right up at the top of the hour, so quickly, I do want to let you say all of that into one, infrastructure and jobs, and how are you going to speak with your local and state governments?
Okay. First of all, Peggy made mention of major moves. Major Moves comes to an end this year. That means this funding for these type of infrastructure jobs is going from $1 billion every biennium down to probably in the $300-400 million area. So when we talk about all these drags on this surplus, well, guess what? Major Moves is gone. And these are living wage jobs providing infrastructure that every community is trying to get a grant for, get some of that money for, fix up their sewer system, fix up whatever it might be. So we're going to have to address that in the next session, and it's going to come. And you know, Major Moves has done a lot of good things for a number of communities, and I don't want to see it dry up. But it's going to be a big drag on our budget. It's going to be something we're going to have to address and address quickly.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
About 30 seconds.
Exactly.
All right, I'm figuring that. I held a press conference at the Eel River Bridge on State Road 46. State Road 46 is District 46. It's the one link. It's the artery. That bridge has been closed twice now within a year. We understand in District 46 what it means to not have access to good bridges, to not have access to roads that are not even built. Emergency repairs are very costly. We're looking at over $500,000 for the two emergency repairs. We need to do it properly the first time, and then that would be additional savings that we could have in terms of that. My whole philosophy is you determine the need and then you fund it. It doesn't matter to me how much money is available initially, because we need to identify through a 1-5 scale or whatever, where are our biggest concerns. You fund those that are most important. My philosophy is if a school bus is on it, then it becomes a number one need for our communities.
All right, well, we have reached the end. I think, you know, cats are going to turn off the cameras and walk out on us, so it doesn't really matter if we keep talking. I do invite you to stay in touch with me and let your philosophies on all of these issues continue to come out to the people. I really appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you.
Again, you've been listening to Interchange on WFHB. This is being recorded at the Community Access Television Services at the Monroe County Public Library. We especially want to thank cats for allowing us to come and have this discussion here. Here, sitting with me here at the table, we'll go the other way this time. Are all candidates for our Indiana House of Representatives. You'll see them on the ballots this fall if you go for early voting. November 6th is Election Day. And so thank you again, Jim Mann, running for District 46. Matt Ubelar, District 62. Peggy Welch, District 60. And Bob Heaton, also District 46. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
For WFHB, I'm Allison Bechtesh.